show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
That's it. That's us. Okay. Time once again, more of the Bucket Strategy Investing Program. We welcome everybody this time to the first hour of the program, wherever you happen to be watching or listening. I'm Johnny Dean, giving you every day the best in money information. Brain Trust standing by, ready to help you out this hour. Professor Plum is our Brain Trust advisor, returning with me once again as we get set to kick things off for this particular hour. Rick's here from Lucia Capital Group, and we thank them for that as well. Now, this hour, among a whole bunch of other things, we're going to get started talking about planning for an early retirement. And what do we mean by early? That's obviously relatively relative. By that, we mean somewhere, I would say, before 60 years of age, okay? Yours can be any age you want. But retiring early can bring up some interesting situations that you may not have thought about if you're looking to punch your last time clock, right? You got medical expenses, that can be a big problem. As can your income, or lack of income in some cases. So how do you make sure that your money lasts as long as you do? And if you got pensions or you've got other sources of guaranteed income, those can certainly help, but there's more to it than that. So we're going to talk about this with Professor Plum coming up here in just a moment or two, helping you plan. 877-PLANNER is our number. Phone lines are open right now, so you can give us a call with your money questions. 877-752-6637, spelling out PLANNER on your phone. Or you can just head over to wealthed.com, our website, wealthed.com. Send us an email. You click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. We'll answer it here on the program. Professor Rick Plum here with me, certified financial planner type from Lucia Capital Group. Rick will remind you, as will I, by the way, that you need a strategy that addresses each of your retirement needs, not some generic thing that gets pulled down off of a website somewhere or a big company corporate server. You need a strategy that aims to make sure your retirement goals are covered the first time. That's bucket strategies, what we talk about. And the Brain Trust advisors will put one together for you. If you call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group at this number, 800-644-1150, talk to any of them about your financial future and give yourself some peace of mind, potentially. 800-644-1150. That's the off-air number. On air, our number here in the studio, once again, 877-PLANNER. We got some room on the phones here at the top of the hour. 877-752-6637. Welcome, Professor Plum. I feel like I've been talking forever.
You have been.
Does it seem that way, you know, when I come on? I'm just saying hi to everybody, and here's what we're going to talk about. Here's the phone number. Here's the website. And we're already like 9 minutes into the hour. Anyway, welcome to the program. We appreciate everyone being here. So, okay, retiring early. This is always a
relative dream.
It is for many people. You ask anybody, say in their 20s, when do you plan on retiring?
Well, and they don't think 50 is early. They think 50 is old.
55 is the age that I hear most often. 55.
But to a 25-year-old, 55 is like ancient.
Well, it's more than double their life. So, yes, it seems like a long way away. But there are people who, and I've known some public sector employees, firefighters, police officers, and the like, who have been in it for 30 years, and at some point they say, it's more cost effective for me to retire. So they wind up retiring at 55, 50 in some cases.
I was speaking to a neighbor of mine over the last weekend. He's a couple years younger than me, mm-hmm. and he was telling me that October is the day. October, he's going to retire in October. I think he's 53 years old. I didn't realize your wife was making that much money that you could retire.
That's right. You're coming back from work. You still got your lunch pail in your hand. You know, you're kind of slouched. You're walking down the driveway. Hey, I'm retiring in about 5 months.
But he has worked for the same, and it's a pseudo public utility, a water district, and for the last 30 plus years.
Yeah, see, that's it.
And he'll have a pension. And he'll have maxed out his pension at, you know, in 30, mm-hmm. whatever 30 years he's been there. And he goes, I don't know if I'm going to find another job or just, you know, he's still got some kids that are in their young teens or, preteens and young teens. He'd be stay-at-home dad
so
for
income's,
a little while.
So income's not an issue is what you're saying.
Well, I mean, it's going to be an issue because the next thing was talking about, you know, moving down. You know, they only bought the house 8-10 years ago. Mm. And now they're talking about moving down, you know, downsizing. Or he is.
Age 53, that seems awfully young to me.
He's retiring at 53.
Then again, we're right in that age group, so as old as that seemed to us 30 years ago, it now seems relatively young. So, okay, you got I think one of the biggest issues, I actually talked to my former college roommate who was in town. He's about 4 years older than I am, so he's, you know, 55, 56, something like that. And he had plenty of money to retire. He'd been working at Fidelity since I've known him, since, you know, after college, so 30 plus years. I said, what are you doing still working? He says, the only reason I'm still doing this is because of health care.
Yeah, that's
said,
a big question.
I've got a family. They've got, you know, three kids who are, you know, in college, but still
on their health
care. Yeah, you can cover them up to age 26. He said, you know, it'll run me $27,000-$28,000 just for health care for the family. You don't realize often how much the employer actually contributes to your health plan.
Well, in the 50s, we don't see that people talking about that because we don't see that many people retiring at 50. But people retiring at 60, 62, 63, yeah, one of the bigger issues when they're looking at retirement that they are somewhat surprised by is the cost of health care going forward until they can get to Medicare at 65. There, a lot of people try to continue to work until at least 65 just to be able mm-hmm. to wait until they can get onto Medicare, at least have some, you know, basic medical insurance, and then with the supplements, reasonable insurance. But a lot of people don't want to retire too early because of the cost and the hassle of the health insurance.
Well,
this is a big issue.
All right, so let's start with that part of it, because that may be one of the biggest things that people who retire early don't think about, or at least if they have thought about it, they realize it may stop them from retiring early. How do you set up your financial life from a healthcare perspective? Do you have to set this way up in advance?
Well, in some respects, you should be at least considering it. I know some people that have retired in the last couple of years have done so, but they're using their personal bank accounts to live off of, not doing conversions, not taking their Social Security right now. They're between 62 and 65. And the reason they're living off a bank account, let's say they have $300,000 in a bank account, they're taking $50,000, $60,000 a year out of it. How much income are they showing? $3,000 maybe? $2,000 in interest? And what does that allow them to do? It allows them to get a free health insurance policy from Obamacare. They've got a million plus or more inside their 401ks, and they're going to have plenty of money with Social Security kicks in. But until they get to Medicare, they are showing no income.
Because it's based
on... So they can get a cheap insurance policy through the exchange.
Yeah, and I tell you what, that's one group of people
that's a big group now.
Help. Because not only that, but you've got... you can't be turned down.
And I think it's an unintended consequence. I mean, because obviously these people are not poor.
But what it forces them to do, though, is to take...
Look poor on their tax return.
50 or... And by the way, take 50 or 60 grand out of a... Call it a $300,000 in your example.
Savings account.
Out of a savings account. That's... What is that? A 20%?
Well, yeah. They're going to distribute the majority of their personal money. And the people that I've seen that are doing this, you know, over the next 5 years. But they don't care. Because they're getting, you know, the equivalent of a, you know, $10,000, $12,000, $15,000 a year cost covered. So it's like they're earning $10,000, $15,000, $20,000 a year on this money that they have.
Yeah.
Otherwise, they'd have to take that much more out of their accounts to pay for the health care.
All right. So that's one possibility, at least as it exists right now. One possibility for somebody who's over the age of 59 and a half. What do you do for somebody who's, say, age 55?
Well, first off, you better save a lot of money or have very moderate needs. Because there is no help at 55, 50, 52, 53. There's no Social Security. It's still quite a ways away. Even at the earliest, at 62, you're still going to have to fund a fairly high, whatever your income need is, for the next X number of years without any help from anywhere else. No Medicare, no Social Security benefit. So it's all on you, and you're going to be drawing down your portfolio fairly heavily in the first years. So you better start early. You better start saving or win the lottery. One of those issues is going to have to happen because it takes a lot of money.
So if you're planning on retiring early, it should be something that you've thought about for probably a good 20 years prior to retiring. You can't I don't think you can just snap your fingers at 48 and say all of a sudden I'm going to try to retire at age 56.
Not unless things have already gone in your favor by luck, by chance.
Yeah.
You know, that you inherited money. You work for a company that had a stock plan that stock options or whatever, and the stock just blew up and it's worth a ton of money. And all of a sudden you say, hey, you know what? I may be able to retire early. It wasn't something I'd actually planned on, but looking at my finances now, I think I've got some money on the way. But so unless you start early, it's going to take some extraordinary event outside of your control to make it work.
So as far as the healthcare goes, if you're between ages 55, if you're under 59 and a half, you're going to have to just suck it up and buy it.
Right. And so you either buy it or you basically bankrupt yourself on your tax return and your income sources so that you can qualify for the subsidies.
Yeah, which is a lot harder to do if you're under age 59 and a half, because you're going to have to live off of personal money until that time.
Or do a structured 72T to the level that you want, because there's an issue, too, with having too little income, because then they automatically throw you into Medicaid, and a lot of people don't like dealing with Medicaid.
Yes.
And so they want to have, they need to structure their income to a certain level, so they do a 72T to get the income they want to avoid the Medicaid, but low enough that they get
subsidies. They can get to the subsidies, yeah. It's an interesting thing.
And you thought this was easy.
Of course it's easy. Well, a lot of things to think about. Another thing you need to think about if you're retiring early, you can talk about downsizing, where are you going to live. What about your 401k plan at work, your retirement plan at work? What do you do with that? So we'll talk a little bit about that. But in the meantime, we got lines open, so give us a call on any money issue you have. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your money questions. We do have lines open. 877-PLANNER is our number here in the studio. Standing by to take your calls and answer those questions for you, both on the program and off the program. In fact, headed out of here today. In fact, right after the show is Professor Rick Plum heading up to the land up north, out west, a place we call Portland, Oregon. That's right, Portland, Oregon, the next workshop happening tomorrow morning, 9 o'clock local time. If you want to join the Brain Trust for one of these retirement income strategies workshops, either in Portland or in one of the other cities coming up, you go to wealthed.com, wealthed.com, our website. So this Saturday, tomorrow, March 19th, Portland, Oregon, sign up, still some room, we'll make room for everybody. We'd love to see you there, get your money questions answered, and learn all about retirement income strategies. Meet the Brain Trust, too. That's the important thing. March 19th, tomorrow in Portland. April 9th, Houston, Texas, a couple of weeks away. And then Santa Clara, California, at the end of April, April 30th. So you've got some time there. But mark it down. In fact, sign up. If you have plans on showing, sign up now at wealthed.com. It is all free, wealthed.com. Once again, we would love to see you there. We'll remind you more about Portland coming up, because that'll be tomorrow. All right, 877-PLANNER. I said that. We got room on the phones right now. If you have a money question, 877-752-6637. We'll talk to you about any issue that's on your mind. Since we're talking a little bit about retiring early, Professor Plum, I guess a question could be, what do you do with your retirement plan at work? And that actually is an important question for many people.
Well, and as we've talked about several times in the last couple of days, it depends on how old you are when you actually terminate employment. If you're under 55 in the year that you terminate, then you can just roll it to an IRA and have a lot more control over it. If you're going to be 55 in the year you terminate, we've talked about this, you can start taking, if your 401k administrator allows, distributions from the 401k to live off of while you're waiting for Social Security or maybe even your pension to start later on, or have access to your IRAs from other plans. So there is the avoidance of penalties. So it's all a matter of what we're trying to accomplish. And it also is very dependent upon how your portfolio is structured. I saw somebody who retired at age 53 a couple years back, about 10 or 12 years ago now, and they had a large 401k with their company, and they had a large position in the company stock in their 401k with the company, and they had been with the company for a very, very long time. And so what they were able to do is do what they call a net unrealized appreciation distribution.
Whoa.
NUA.
What is that, Professor Plum? That always sounds complicated when we bring up net unrealized appreciation.
It can be a little complicated, but they had a large company stock position in their 401k, and they were able to take a distribution. The company stock had done very well over the 35 years they had been with the company. And so their basis, the plan's basis in the stock was very, very low. So they could take a distribution and pay of the stock, all of the stock, and the stock was worth about $500,000. And they could take a distribution of the stock, and I think that the base was in the $40,000 range. So they only had to pay tax on that $40,000. Now, they were 53. They still had to pay a penalty on that $40,000 as well. So they paid a $4,000 penalty plus a little bit of income tax on that $40,000 of stock that was distributed to them. But now they've got $500,000 worth of stock. And they can start selling the stock off at capital gain rates. And they were able to sell, starting the next year, they were able to sell enough stock to live off of for the next 5, 6, 7, 8 years until they got to 59.5. And you know how much in taxes they were paying on the majority of that stock sale? That would be zero.
Because
they were in the 15% income tax bracket. And because with the net unrealized appreciation distribution, now I own the stock personally. My basis is what the distribution was, the taxable part of the distribution. The rest of it's going to be capital gain.
And that's good for people who have a lot of company stock in their 401k.
Now, have you seen a pattern between the two people that I talked about so far? Both of them work for the same company, not the same company, but they'd work for their individual
time.
Companies for a long time.
You're talking 30 years plus.
30 years plus.
Think.
Both these people that retired early that I've talked about had the same employer for a really long time. And so one of them had a pension that worked out very well. The other one had stock that worked out very well. And the reality is you're going to need some help if you want to retire early. Something is going to have to work in your favor. You know, you're going to either have, it's very rare that somebody starts off at age 20, 21, 22 with the idea that I'm going to retire at 50, 52, 55, and I'm going to do it just in general on my own without any outside help. I can't count on an inheritance. I don't want to count on the stock just exploding that I can count on. I'm going to have to do it all on my own and with normal rates of return, historical rates of return type stuff. It's very rare that you can do it that way unless you are just very driven at a very, very early age. Most people that I've seen that have retired early did so because they either started a company that they sold, you know, they sold their company at 45, 48, 50, and they got, you know, $10 million, okay? They worked their tail off, and maybe they even gave up some, you know, a lot of personal fun during their working days because they were building this company, but they were able to sell it at a relatively early age, and now they can turn around and do whatever they want. How old was Mark Cuban when he sold his company? He's not that old now, is he?
Younger than I am right now,
yeah.
I'll tell you that.
So, I mean, that's one way to do it. He sold it for a reasonable price, had a pretty good time.
So the idea would be to go back in time and create a website like broadcast.com.
Yeah.
And then go to Yahoo and say, hey, listen, I got this. Do you want to buy it? And they say yes for $1 billion. And then you say, okay, where do I sign?
Yeah, so... But a lot of the people that retire early, something has happened. They built a business. Okay, it doesn't have to be broadcast.com. You know, it could be something else.
Which doesn't even exist as far as I know anymore. Doesn't matter.
It does. It exists a billion times over for Mark Cuban.
I mean, there you go.
But it's going to be difficult to retire early. But the first thing is starting early. Now, a lot of these people started working very early, and they started building a portfolio or a business early that they could then ultimately turn into something that they could retire on. This is not done the old-fashioned way that we talk about the 401k. You know, just put in your time, work, put your 3% in, get the or 6% in, get the 3% match. Yeah, yeah. That you're not going to retire early on.
Well,
you're going to have to do something else.
You know, and we've had calls from a couple of people over the years who have said, "Look, sure you can retire early. You just have to learn to live on
$1,000 a month."
Or $15,000 a year or something like that. And we had a call one time, I think, that was actually almost chastising you.
Oh, he was upset
suggesting,
with me.
For suggesting, yeah.
I was suggesting somebody wanted $8,000 a month to retire. They're like, nobody should need $8,000 a month to retire.
Right.
Well, that's nice, but some people like to have that.
Which means, though, that if you can live on something in the order of, you know, $12,000 a year, $15,000 a year of income, maybe you don't have any expenses, who knows? I mean, there are ways around that, too. You could just lower your lifestyle a little bit.
Well, it's all a give and take. I mean, and whether we retire early or we retire late, it's all a matter of what are our expenses compared to the incomes that we can generate. Incomes being Social Security and maybe a pension or distributions from our portfolio. Obviously, if you're retiring early, the distributions have to potentially last a lot longer.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one of the difficulties of retiring early, is that you have a shorter funding period and a longer payout period. It's hard to make that work. Yeah, that's just the numbers are against you. The math is against you.
Well, they really are. And if you're trying to retire at 50 or 55, you could conceivably have 40 years ahead of you that you got to fund for. Where somebody retiring at 65 who has Medicare and Social Security in many cases, if not most cases, has a less time to fund for, less of a distribution period, and a greater income. Okay, we got more coming up. 877-PLANNER. Any question you have, we'll take your phone calls when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Now we're talking. Haven't heard from Starbuck in a long time. And I don't mean Starbucks. Starbuck.
It's not been long enough.
That's one of those hip names from the, you know, group names from the mid-70s. Oh, it's a great song. Great song. Great.
Glad you like it.
Yeah, come on. Hey, come on. Brings me back. Summer of 76, man. Anyway, it doesn't matter. Okay, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, with or without Starbuck. We're going up next to North Point, New York. We'll talk with Joe. Hi, Joe. How can we help you today?
I'm looking into getting a tax return done for me and my daughter. And when I do the return with my income, she's eligible for the college credits and actually gets a much better refund than with her on my return. If I file a return without her as a dependent, how does that affect my overall financial aid from the schools when I submit the FAFSA form?
Wow, it's been a long time since I've done the forms, but I don't think it has anything to do with it now that she's in school. They're going to look at unfortunately, I don't have a good answer for this because it's been a long time. But I think it shouldn't be an issue. Now, she's going to show more income. No, she won't. Her income is her income. Your income is your income. I don't think it has an issue. Don't hold me to it, but I don't think there's an issue.
I don't think there's an issue either. And I filled it out a couple of times.
But I didn't get any aid to begin with, so it didn't matter.
Well, no, I didn't get any either. But I've known people who it just logically sounds to me like it shouldn't affect anything.
Yeah, but you're talking taxes, financial aid, and logic. Those don't go together.
Yeah.
That's the problem. Okay. All right, that's what I was thinking. I mean, she just gets a much better refund than she would without her on my return, and I don't have a big effect of it.
Well, is she in her first 4 years of college?
Yes.
And she's getting a bigger return. It's having a bigger effect on her income than yours, even though if you're paying the expenses, you could potentially be eligible for the American Opportunity Credit. You're not getting it.
Phase out of those.
Well, if you phase out of those, then your income's too high to get any financial aid really anyway.
Well, I'm sort of on the edge where, you know, it's right over that, and so we do get some.
Okay.
So, plus I got two other kids in school at the same time.
Oh, well, wow. That helps. I mean, not helps. Yeah. I mean, it helps from the financial aid standpoint.
It hurts and it helps at the same time. Yeah.
So you might want to, look at it a couple different ways, but I unfortunately can't give you the right answer for that.
Okay. All right. I appreciate your time.
Joe. Thanks for the call. Now he's got me thinking, though.
Well, he's up above the threshold, the phase-out for the American Opportunity Credit, which is a big credit.
Oh, it's great.
And so his daughter is claiming it. And so if she owes some taxes, it will wipe away the taxes or a big chunk of the taxes she owes, and then even potentially create another refundable portion of the credit, another $1,000 of refund that she didn't even – for taxes she didn't even owe.
Right.
Where he's not eligible for it because he's phasing out of it. So he's already at the high-end side of the income side. So it's going to be tough for him to get much financial aid no matter what he does.
Probably not. Although if she wants to take some of that refund that she gets and, you know,
give it back to dad.
Give it to dad. Hey, fat chance, you know, my daughter's doing the same thing. My younger daughter.
She's back to you?
No. Oh, hey-o. But I wouldn't expect her to because she's footing most of the bill for her classes.
If she's paying the bill, she shouldn't be giving you the credit back.
Well, but in exchange I'm giving her, food and so forth. Now, I'm not asking for it back. It's fine. Good for her. But, boy, I saw her refund.
Yes.
Wow. That would.
And you saw your non-refund.
I saw my lack of – I haven't even looked yet. I still haven't filled it out yet. Well, since he brought it up, let's just mention this. You brought it up. The American Opportunity Credit, as far as and by the way, in another week or two, I think we're going to be talking a little bit more in depth about these college savings plans that are out there. But the American Opportunity Credit is something that I think a lot of people don't know about, but can help certainly if you fall within certain income limits, Professor Plum.
Yeah, I was just looking the income limit up. I can't find it quick enough.
Well, that's okay. But there is an income limit. It's not hard to find if you want to look online. Talk about how it works, though.
Well, when you pay qualified higher education expenses, college, and it, your child, or if it's, you're paying for yourself, you're in your first four-year degree program. It has to be a degree program or a, something of that nature. You can get a credit, and a credit is, the credit is very nice. It's up to $2,500. You have to spend at least $4,000 in actual qualified higher education expenses, and then you get a credit of up to $2,500. Now, if you owe $2,500 in taxes, it'll just wipe out that tax. If you don't owe $2,500 in taxes, it can actually be partially refunded to you. So let's say you do your tax return, you only owe $800 in taxes. Your actual tax liability for the year was $800. Well, you could use the credit to wipe out that $800 and get a refundable credit for another $1,000.
And refundable meaning you can get money back.
They just send it back to you. Even if you don't owe any taxes, you didn't do any withholding, and they'll still send you a check for $1,000.
Right. It's like having a refundable credit is like having something that you bought for, you know, $500. You bring it back to the store.
They give you the 500 plus 1,000.
And they give you another 1,000 on top of that. And because they'll say, well, your credit is 1,500. And that's exactly how a refundable credit works.
So the credit is a very nice deal. Now, there is a phase out to it. And I'm sorry, I don't have that number off the top of my head.
Well, but like I said, we don't have all the numbers here, but it's fairly easy to find. I think it's somewhere, I won't say, because I looked it up once upon a time. But if you can look it up online. You just check out the American Opportunity, look up American Opportunity Credit and income limits, and it should come up fairly quickly. But for people who are paying for college that do come in under the income limits, Professor Plum, this can be a great thing.
Well, it sure helps. I mean, it doesn't cover the entire expense, obviously, but
no.
Hey,
but
if you
have
get $2,500 back, that's a credit or unit or two.
Now, you have to be in your first 4 years, or
right.
Did you say that already?
And it's only for 4 years. I mean, even though it takes some people 5, 6, 7 years to get their undergraduate degree,
exactly,
it's still only good for 4 years. You can only take it 4 times for each individual
exactly.
child.
All right. Anyway, you can look up those. It seems to me that it's nagging at you that you don't know those income limits.
It is nagging at me. It's bugging me. It's bothering me. It's just ticking me off.
Well, what we could do is maybe during the break, which is coming up in a few minutes, during the break, you can look it up and we can come back and report to people. Does that work for you?
It's going to have to. I don't have a choice.
Okay. Well, if I read the next email, are you going to be able to?
I can listen. I can multitask.
Okay. Well, here we go with the next email. Robert in Columbus, Ohio. By the way,
$160,000.
For married couple.
Yes. It starts phasing out at that
so
point.
So for a single individual, it's got to be 80.
Yes, half the number.
Well, as I was going to say, I was about to say around $80,000.
For a single individual, yes.
Yeah, for like the traditional IRA, whatever. Okay. Are we set?
I'm ready.
Okay. This guy's just
Friday, right?
Obsessive.
It made me mad that I couldn't remember it.
I know it does. Now you're going to have to find out the actual answer to Joe's question.
I'm not that curious.
You're not that good, or what are you saying?
You want me to go look at a FAFSA form?
No, it's all right. Don't worry about it.
I didn't like looking at it when I was doing it for me.
Well, they're confusing. But the next time we talk about this, I think we do need to include some stuff on the FAFSA form, because that's what people that's really where most people get their aid. Robert in Columbus, Ohio. I've been paying on student loans, two of them.
Education.
Yeah, that's right. That I recently placed in an income-based plan. Mm-hmm. I had to pay a company to do the paperwork, and it's the second time I've paid a company to help me with my student loans. I have been paying on the loan since 1995 and still owe over 25, excuse me, wait.
25.
Okay, good. He included the cents in it. So I still owe over $25,000. I would like to know if this was a good choice. Robert in Columbus, Ohio.
Well, student debt is one of the hardest things. You can't get rid of it in bankruptcies and other things, so it's going to be nagging at you for a while until you pay it off. The income-based plan is probably the best way to do it because you're required to pay 10% of your income. So if you currently don't have a very high income, you're only required to pay 10% towards it, and after a period of time, I think it's 10 years, they'll just forgive what is left. So if you've got it into the income-based plan, that's probably the best thing that you can do other than trying to refinance it, which you've probably already done multiple times to get to the lower interest rates. And now, depending upon your income, you will either pay it off by paying 10% of your income for the next several years, or it'll be paid off after a period of time. And so, unfortunately, this has been around here. You've been paying on this debt for 20 years. I don't know if you've paid every year. I know most of the time where I see it 20 years out, somebody's missed a lot of years. They've had
Usually by 10 years.
Well, the income-based plans have only been around for a little while.
Yeah.
But usually the plans are 10 to 15 year repayments, but some of them are fairly large.
Now, I'm sorry, how these work? Because yeah, you did say they're fairly new. It's almost an ability to pay.
Right. They look at it. They say, well, if your payment to pay this off is, you know, some doctors and some of these high end professionals are coming out with multiple hundreds of thousands of dollars of debt, and the payment to pay it off is, you know, $5,000-$7,000 a month. So that's more than most people make. And so it's very difficult to make the payments. And so they've created these income-based plans where you pay 10% of your annual income. So if you make $100,000, you'll end up paying $10,000 a year in student loan payments. Well, if you've got $250,000 of debt, he doesn't, he only has $25,000 left, but that's, you're never gonna pay that off at that $10,000 a year. And so this is a way to hopefully pay back what you can pay back, and then have some of it forgiven potentially.
Oh, it's expensive and it's drives me nuts. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, take a break here, 877-752-6637. We do have some lines open right now, so if you want to get on board, do so right now, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, coming back, Bucket Strategy Investing. Go, we'll put it on this part. Okay, good. That's nice. Oh, wait, I'm talking. Stop talking for a moment. See, I would never know it's Friday if we didn't play Faces.
Oh, I would know.
I would forget. You know, days sort of melt into weeks and months and all that stuff. Welcome to the program, Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, guitar, courtesy of Faces and Rod Stewart. And that's right, because it is Friday and tomorrow is Saturday, and tomorrow happens to be the 19th of March. That means that everyone's getting together in Portland, Tigard, Portland, the whole area up there for the 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. The next one in Portland tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock at the Embassy Suites. You want to join the Brain Trust there, you can go to wealthed.com. You go there first, you say, hey, I'm coming, I'm bringing whoever I am, or I'm coming all by myself, and we'll make room for you at the workshop in Portland. Meet Professor Plum, Terry Keyes, and the entire gang there in Portland tomorrow. Still a little bit of room left, so sign up now. It's all free at wealthed.com. After that, April 9th, Houston, Texas, and then April 30th, Santa Clara. A little bit of ways away, but mark it down, or just sign up if you plan on showing up. Get your sign-up sheet in early there at wealthed.com. Portland, Houston, Santa Clara, the next three, and check wealthed.com for any other locations that happen to be up there throughout May as well. Wealthed.com. Hope to see you there. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Following up on a discussion we had earlier this week, Professor Plum, on bonds and bond funds and fixed income and all of that, I had a question after the show. I think it was Tuesday or Wednesday or whenever it was. How do you evaluate the risk of a bond and a bond fund? I mean, other than, I suppose, saying that interest rates could go up, which would affect anybody's bonds or bond fund portfolios, how do you evaluate the risk of such a thing?
Well, there's a couple things to metrics to look at. One is the credit quality of the bond that you're looking at, or the bond fund that you're looking at. What is the average credit quality? Length of maturity is an issue. How long is the average maturity in that fund, or how long are the maturities in the individual portfolio of bonds that you own? Maturities have a lot to do with volatility. The longer the maturity, the more volatile the price will be on that current value of that bond. It'll go up and down a lot. If it's a short maturity, it won't have as much volatility. So those are the two main ways to try to look at how much risk am I actually taking. Now the question is, how much risk and what is my risk return profile? Am I being adequately compensated in return potential from the risk that I am taking, or for the risk that I'm taking? Well, that is a different answer for a lot of people, but the first thing is you got to understand what the risk is. How much are you risking? How much could it possibly go down if, or up on the other side, if interest rates change? What is the credit risk of doing this? So there are ways to limit different types of risk, usually by picking up a different risk. I mean, so maturity risk, long-term maturities, you could or interest rate risk, you could change to a more floating rate environment. Floating rate funds, the interest rates go up when interest rates go up, so you get away from some of that interest rate risk where it doesn't have the same interaction when interest rates go up, your value goes down because your interest rate went up too, so it's not as big of a deal. But typically when you go into those types of areas, the credit quality may not be as high as other areas. So you have to, you know, make sure you're dealing with still pretty good credit quality. You can just buy and invest in shorter duration. But the reality was the best performing asset class over the last, you know, the first part of this year was a long bond fund because interest rates went down. And go figure. Nobody saw, I guess some people saw that coming, but I think they were guessing.
They were.
And they it guessed right. But it all has to do with understanding the risk-return relationship of how you're putting the portfolios together. When you're looking at an individual bond, you know, it's still, people still think that they're getting 5, 6, 7% on their individual bond because it has a 6% coupon on it, coupon being the interest rate. But unless that bond is currently selling at what they call par, meaning equal to their face amount, they're not getting 6% return over the rest of the life of that bond.
Okay, so you'll need to explain that too, because somebody who bought a bond, you know, however long ago it was, and the face amount it says, you know, 5%, call it, and you put in $1,000 or whatever it happened to be, they're saying, well, wait a minute, you're saying that I'm still not earning 5% on this? I thought I was.
You're still getting 5% on the face amount, but you could sell that bond today for potentially a premium, which is more than the face amount. We're using John's $1,000 bond that's paying 5%. But depending upon how many more years it is until it matures, somebody else may be willing to pay you quite a bit more for that bond than $1,000. Maybe they're willing to pay you $1,100, $1,200 to get that $1,000?
$50.
$50. Yeah, that's why I like $100,000 bonds. It actually has some return to it. Yeah, to get that $50 annual payment, they're willing to pay you more. Now, if it's going to mature in a year, they're not willing to pay you that much more because they're only going to get that $50 instead of $10 for 1 year. So they're only maybe willing to pay you $40 more for that bond than they would have otherwise. But if it's not going to mature for 15 years and they get an extra, you know, $40 a year over the next 14, 15 years, they're willing to pay you a lot more for that bond than the current face amount. So what's my real rate of return? The real rate of return is my current value. You look at, that's my money into the investment, the interest that's getting paid every year, and then the maturity value when it matures. Now, we're talking about individual bonds here. And determine what the rate of return is to create that. How much went in, how much is coming out, and given the time horizons that is coming out. Remember, a dollar today is worth more than a dollar a year from now, a dollar 5 years from now, a dollar 10 years from now. So there's a time value of money calculation. We look at it as a yield to maturity, not just yield. Mm-hmm. But yield to maturity. Yield is a calculation. If I have a bond, you know, a $1,000 bond that's paying me 5%, if it's trading at par at $1,000, what you do to find the yield is my expected annual income, $50, divided by the current value, $1,000, 5% yield. But what if it's selling at a premium? And maybe it's selling at a premium of 120, or what they quote is 120, which means $1,200. Well, now $5,000 divided by 1200 is a lot lower yield. But is that my real rate of return? No, because I don't get the 1200 back when it matures. I only get the 1000 back when it matures. All of these things go into consideration when you're trying to determine whether or not to keep or buy a specific bond. And by understanding the yield to maturity and and comparing it to equivalent risks of other bonds and other investments, you can say, I'm getting paid for the risk that I'm taking, or I'm not. And I can say, a lot of times we'll look at it and it's a 10 or 15 year bond and the yield to maturity is like 3. And somebody says, well, I don't want to tie something up for 3%. Well, that's what you just did. Or the yield to maturity is 5, 5.5. And you're saying, yeah, that's reasonable. I'll take that.
Well, I hope that.
At least you understand it.
Yeah, yeah. And if you have questions on this, you can certainly give us a call. We'll talk more about bonds later. 877-PLANNER is our number on the air. If you want to talk to the Brain Trust off the air, Professor Rick Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group about anything we talk about on this show, their off-air number, 800-644-1150. Another hour of Bucket Strategy Investing is just ahead.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.